how often do you actually check your email? Do you ever turn your phone off? More likely than not, I find that a lot of people don't. It's almost that if I can't be reached or if I can't reach out to what I need, then what's going to happen? Well, the reality is that you can just turn it back on whenever you're ready. But I think when you don't take a step away and be more mindful, then all the daily stress does get to you. The idea is that, you know, you can switch off CNN, that's 24/7. I mean, you don't need to sleep next to your phone. Take a step back and look at the big picture of what's really going on in your life and what you can control around you.
Oh, my, frantic stuff. I have days like that. How about you? And there are times when I leave the phone at home. I do. Or I don't look at email for a few days. And I have to confess, it's both relaxing and a bit unnerving all at the same time. As a matter of fact, I'm getting just a little antsy thinking about it right now. We'll hear from a specialist today who will offer some helpful and realistic suggestions for unplugging in a healthy way, both you and your children. Welcome to another visit we call Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. This program is a part of a much larger and broader ministry called OCN, or the Orthodox Christian Network. Find out more about us on the web at myocn.net, that's myocn.net, and on Facebook and Twitter. Like many things these days, perhaps too many, you can follow us 24/7. Before we get to that conversation, however, about being overwhelmed by the media, we're going to continue our month-long emphasis on martyrdom. And with that interview, here's Father Chris.
With us today is Father Nicholas, a monk from St. Herman's Monastery in Platina, California. Welcome, Father Nicholas.
Thank you very much.
St. Herman Press publishes a bi-monthly journal titled The Orthodox Word, and really a vast collection of books. Tell us about the Royal Passion Bearers of Russia, their life and service. It sounds very interesting.
A number of years ago, probably about 15 years ago, we found a copy of the service to the Tsar Nicholas and his family in Slavonic, and we did an in-house translation that we'd been using, and we wanted to share it. And at the same time, we also, you know, the royal martyrs are extremely popular in Russia and in other places as well, including the United States. And so we just wanted to make a brief life available that kind of went over the major points of their life, the history of that era. And so that was how that came about. It's a large format book, so that it's easy, you know, and large print for the service part, so that it people can put it on the Kleros and have an easy time reading it.
Okay. And why do you think the royal martyrs have such interest? What is it about them?
There are a number of reasons for that. Number one, when they were eliminated from power in 1917, it was seen by spiritually minded Russians as a betrayal of God, even, because the authority that had, you know, like, for instance, a Tsar, when he was anointed to be Tsar, he was anointed. He was actually chrismated a second time.
Really?
And the first day, he would receive communion like a priest at the altar. It was seen as a sacramental relationship.
Okay.
And so the result was that when he was basically betrayed by his own people, many people felt like they had committed a tremendous sin against the church, against God, against and against the oath they had taken to support him. And so over the years, even during Soviet times, people felt horribly guilty about it and began to venerate them. And also, they led quite a holy life as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of at the end of communism, it was like instantaneous. I was actually living in Russia at the time, and every church I went into had icons of them in it, and they hadn't even been canonized yet.
Hmm. Well, and true, too, when communism fell, we know there was an explosion of Orthodox Christianity within the country of Russia. At least that's what my sources tell me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The churches, I was watching this, you know, it was happening before my eyes. Churches that had been turned into storage units were becoming churches again, you know, being rebuilt. Nice. New churches were being built. Monasteries were being populated. It was a very exciting time. And among the saints that were being like pushed forward at that time were all of the new martyrs of Russia, those who had been killed during the communist times, but specifically the royal martyrs as, well, even an emotional favorite. I mean, because right. you read their life and they're wonderful people.
Yes.
I mean, you know, what happened to them was absolutely, you know, tragic.
It's tragic. You know, Father, we've been speaking all month about martyrs and witnesses. Can you please remind our listeners how a passion bearer differs among the ranks of the martyrs?
Well, in Russia, they have this category. I don't know if any other church has this particular category, and it goes all the way back to the time of the beginning of Orthodox Russia in the 10th century. The two of the sons of Grand Prince Vladimir, who was the baptizer of Russia, were killed by their brother because he wanted to take their territory, he wanted to take their power, and they knew this was coming, and they didn't oppose him. In other words, they were not being asked to renounce their faith, which is the sort of what you think of when you think of martyrdom. You think, for instance, in the early days of Christianity, when the Roman Empire said, you know, renounce Christ and worship the gods or we'll kill you. That's sort of straightforward. During the Turkish yoke, the same thing. It was, you know, embrace Islam or die. In this case, no one's being asked to renounce their faith. They die in imitation of Christ. They die knowing that they're going to be killed. This sort of captures it. When they were already imprisoned in Siberia, Grand Duchess Olga, the oldest daughter of the family, wrote in a letter the following: Father asked to have it passed on to all who have remained loyal to him and to those on whom they might have influence that they not avenge him, for he has forgiven all and prays for all, that they not take revenge for themselves, and that they remember that the evil which is now in the world will become yet more powerful, but that it is not evil that conquers evil, but only love. And that statement pretty much captures what a passion bearer is all about.
Okay. Father, what about the Orthodox Church as far as how many passion bearers are there? Do we know that?
Well, it's not a large category.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, most of the people who were killed during the communist era were considered to be martyrs because, well, for instance, very often priests were being told, renounce the priesthood, admit that you're anti-Soviet,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, if you admit that you're anti-Soviet, you're admitting that you're against a policy that's against the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually quite few. It's not a very large category within the Russian
church. Within
the church,
okay. Let me ask you this, Father, then. Why is Tsar Nicholas considered to be a passion bearer?
Well, in his case, there was no demand that he renounce the Christian faith. He was killed for who he was and what he represented.
Mm.
And he represented Holy Russia.
Okay.
This idea that Russia was under God's protection. He was a great patron of the church. You know, it's what he represented in the eyes of the people.
Mm-hmm.
He represented the anointed Tsar.
Okay.
And as a result, he had to go.
So is this why he's considered a saint? I mean, does that martyrdom then mean like an instant canonization? How did that go?
Well, no, actually, there's more to it than that. And that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the way he was killed is part of it, but also the way he lived his life.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very pious man. During his reign, for instance, I've got a couple of statistics here that are kind of interesting.
Sure.
The number of churches were increased by more than 10,000 in the country.
Oh, my goodness.
The number of monasteries were increased by 250, and so by the end of his reign, the total number of monasteries were 1,025.
Mm-hmm.
And he himself participated in the laying of the cornerstones of many of these churches and monasteries. During his reign, more saints were canonized than during any previous reign.
That tells you something.
Yeah, something like 13 saints.
Hmm.
Of course, you know, now, since the fall of communism, there have been thousands and thousands, but, you know, most of them are martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's sort of a look back at the whole, you know, communist era. But during his time, and also even just if you look at his family, if you look at the way he raised his children, he's an absolute model for how to raise children.
Hmm.
Just his whole relationship with his people, who he loved dearly, his whole character shows a tremendous example of what a Christian ruler and even a Christian father is supposed to be like.
Mm-hmm. Well, he certainly led an interesting life. I mean, the Tsar must have led a very, very interesting life. I mean, is there anything that, say, somebody doesn't know about him, about his family?
He also, well, an interesting fact is that what we now call United Nations, is well, actually not so much United Nations, but what started off as the League of Nations back in, the 1920s, with the Hague Conference to limit war, mm-hmm. to limit armaments, to kind of like try to bring peace to the world. He was actually the initiator of it.
Okay.
Now, of course, politics being what they are, it didn't work. But his intention was to do that. His intention was to begin a movement of disarmament and of settling disputes between countries by arbitration rather than by military force. Mm-hmm. And you see how far things have gone from that, you know, up to the present time.
Of course.
And also, like I said, his what people don't know, or many people don't know, is the incredible effect he had on his children and his wife also. When they were already imprisoned, they were enabled on a few occasions to receive Holy Communion, and there was one of the priests who confessed the children wrote the following about his impression of this. And so here's a brief quote here. Mm-hmm. He said, "May the Lord grant that all children be as morally lofty as the children of the former Tsar. Such mildness, humility, submission to their parents' will, unconditional devotion to God's will, purity of thought, and total lack of knowledge of earthly filth, passionate and sinful, amazed me. I was astonished and absolutely bewildered. Should I, as their confessor, remind them of sins that were perhaps unfamiliar to them, and how could I incline them to repentance for sins that were unknown to them?"
Amazing.
So that's
amazing individual.
Sort of that's how he raised his family.
You know, these are amazing individuals, and it's hard today for people to see. We have, as we've talked about in other interviews we do, we speak about the sacred and the spectacular, everyone living in the moment, their moment of fame on the front of a newspaper or the front of a magazine or in some YouTube clip somewhere.
Uh-huh.
But these are people, obviously, who have a long, long, if you want to call it, YouTube channel, a long video in their life. I only wish we were able to capture some of that so that people today would go back and to learn how these folks were able to persevere through some of the most difficult times in our history.
It's rather unfortunate that there aren't a lot of books in English on the royal martyrs, royal passion bearers, that show them they're very often political books.
Yes.
Or kind of view them in a different way than an Orthodox Christian would view them, since most of them are not written by Orthodox Christians.
Right.
The books in Russian are amazing. Mm-hmm. Because there are many of them written by people that knew them personally.
Well, Father Nicholas, this has been really a very revealing and I would say an important conversation. Can you share with our listeners how they can purchase this book?
Well, we have a website. It's sainthermanmonastery.com, and that's everything spelled out, S-A-I-N-T, hermanmonastery.com. Mm-hmm. It's that book. You can see that book on the first page that comes up.
Very good, Father. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you're listening to Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and we've been talking with Father Nicholas about his book, The Royal Passion Bearers of Russia. Again, that website he referred to is sainthermanmonastery.com, not .org. That'll take you to the monastery, .com. And the book is indeed right there on the homepage. You can also get it through our website at myocn.net. Just link to our bookstore when you get there. And, of course, anything you purchase in our store generates a donation to the ministry. That's myocn.net. And now with that conversation we alluded to as we began today's program, talking about being overwhelmed by the media, especially social media, here again is Father Chris.
Maybe you're feeling as overwhelmed as I am from time to time. We've invited Eleni Alexiou, a licensed social worker in Bethesda, Maryland, as well as a member of the National Association of Social Workers, who specializes in women's issues, family counseling, and anxiety and depression, to speak with us about finding a balance in the media. Welcome, Eleni.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. You know, we've been featuring our fair share of stories on martyrdom and violence against the church this month because we feel it's our responsibility to share the current events with our readers and listeners. But unfortunately, all of this violence can take a toll on its listeners. From your perspective as a professional, how much bad news can an average person actually handle?
Well, when you say it like that, I mean, it feels like it's a lot to handle. But I think one thing that we can think of from the beginning is to know that we're blessed to be able to be removed from the actual death and destruction that we might be watching on the news or in social media. But like you said, Father, it makes a really good point. In an age where we can't really get rid of any information, the psychological impact, I would say, is so much to the point that bad news really can't affect you psychologically unless you were predisposition towards some of those conditions.
Okay. So the bad news is there, but actually, aren't we the ones who control that bad news?
Right. I mean, that's definitely something to think about as far as, I always say, like, turn off the tube or shut down the computer.
Right.
I mean, there's definitely ways that you can limit the exposure that you get if you feel like you're getting overwhelmed.
Okay. Let's look at some of the danger signs. What are some of the signs that maybe this stuff is really too much for a person?
Well, like I said before, a lot of people are concerned that if they're watching as an adult too much news or they have too much information, that they automatically have PTSD. That not necessarily is the case at post-traumatic stress. But like you said, there are some signs to keep aware of. Just some general ones that I can think of are emotionally, if you start to feel really overwhelmed or helpless, which I hear a lot of people say, it might show up more behaviorally where you feel more lonely. Let's say you stop talking to your family and friends, and perhaps maybe you become, you know, fixated on the computer or, you know, on every single CNN special that comes up, let's say. Other people, they lose sleep, maybe a constant sense of worry. And I'd also say the other piece is that life can just be, I always hear it, life can be so overwhelming, and they can't figure out how to solve that problem, and many times you can't.
Yeah, that's the key. As you're looking at an issue, sometimes you want to fix it, but you simply just can't. And then then you just kind of can spiral down, I would imagine, into the isolation and the feeling of a helpless person. What advice do you have for people who might be feeling at this point overwhelmed? What do we do?
I'd say, you know, like I said, some of the factors that I just mentioned, they're just basic stress reactions. So if you feel like the symptoms are coming up, find a healthcare professional in your area and start to talk to them. I mean, even smaller, perhaps maybe you're not there as far as maybe reaching out at this point. Maybe it's just feeling overwhelmed generally, which is normal. Think about how often you're plugged in. Are you plugged in every single minute of the day? That's a big piece, as well as The one thing I always say is that media is always convenient. That's part of what's happening. But I'll say it over and over again, the simplest technique is to just turn it off.
It does have an on-off button, doesn't it?
Right. The idea is that, you know, you can switch off CNN. I'm sorry, but you can shut down OCN. That's 24/7.
Right.
I mean, you don't need to sleep next to your phone.
Right.
Take a step back and look at the big picture of what's really going on in your life and what you can control around you.
And the statistics that are out there, we've shared these before, that currently the number is higher than this today, but it's at 7.4 billion people in the world. 3 billion of them are on the internet, and the average person is on for 11 hours per day, whether that's their smartphone, their Android, their computer, their iPad, whatever you got. So if you're on it that much, if you're not controlling what's coming into you, well, guess what? You're going to get overwhelmed, right?
Right, and I also, another way to put it as well is that I've also seen people say, you know, I've seen a lot of bad news, and I start to feel like the world around me inherently just becomes more of an evil place. But that's not necessarily the case.
Not necessarily
it's
the case.
It's just that we have to challenge our thoughts to the reality of what we're actually watching or listening to or reading.
Mm-hmm. Some in the news, whether it's CNN or an ABC, NBC, any of the networks, I think, will tell you, they won't tell you publicly, newspapers, magazines will say, if it bleeds, it leads. So anything that is really traumatic, they want to put it out there. Now, do they do that purposely to upset people? I don't believe so. But it's news. They have to grab the news. And that not all news is good for us, is it?
Not necessarily. There is bad news, and there are people that get a really negative reaction to it.
Right.
So if you start to feel like you are, then taking a step away from that news, it will always be there.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's always going to be there.
It's a good way to do it.
Right. All right. We're finding comments on our Facebook page that reveal some real helplessness. What can we do when we feel helpless? Because that's a trip into other things, isn't it?
Right. I mean, that's something that I think a lot of people feel every day. And it's really hard to actually be able to be on some type of social media and not be able to react to it. I'd say, you know, before you type something back to what you might see or read, really think about how that affects you. Perhaps even step back as an Orthodox Christian and say a prayer to yourself. You know, the good old, like, phone a friend and talk to them about what you just read. Those are something that when you feel overwhelmed, people around you and things that support you in your everyday coping allows you to check back into reality and talk about where you're really at and what you can really do.
And what about things like exercise, sleeping well, coping things, prayers, tears? How do we deal with all that stuff?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's just a good way to look at it. Like you said, be sure that you exercise, get a good hours of sleep, depending. And it's okay if you do cry over something that you do read. A big piece of it right now, especially during Lent, I think, is to take advantage of perhaps even going to some of the services that maybe you weren't before or watching it over, you know, using the media for good things as well.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, from your perspective as a professional, I don't think I've ever read anywhere that we are wired as human beings for this 24/7, 365 communication. The mind, the fathers of the church, everyone has said that the mind, the body, the soul needs to rest from time to time. I mean, God himself, on the seventh day, he rested, right? He stopped creating. But
right.
Yet we feel we got to go, 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 go. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I often say that a lot, actually, in practice, is that, you know, how often do you actually check your email? Do you ever turn your phone off?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever? And more likely than not, I find that a lot of people don't.
They don't, right.
It's almost that if I can't be reached or if I can't reach out to what I need, then what's going to happen? Well, the reality is that you can just turn it back on whenever you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you don't take a step away and be more mindful, then all the daily stress does get to you, for anybody.
All right, let's turn the conversation a little bit to children. Talk to us about the importance of protecting our children from the media. I mean, how do we know if they're hearing or seeing too much or hearing or seeing the right things?
I know. When I got asked to do this interview, it made me sit down and think about how much kids are really being affected. And I'll just give you some idea. You know, we talked about how the adults are immersed in the media each day, but I think just TV alone, like something around the idea of like 68% of kids that are 18 to 17 years old, they actually have a TV in their room. And 37 of those have like cable. 20% of 2-year-olds, and even more than that, let's say like between the 3 and 6 years old age, they have a TV in their room. So that would mean that overall, children definitely have more access to media, obviously, every day. You can't escape it, whether it's the newspaper, in the news, online, on the phone, on the tablet. Like you said before, I think as parents, you just need to really set a parameter of how often you're going to be able to, you know, let your kids see it. I guess the best way I'd say as an Orthodox parent is to roll up your sleeves. I know this is really hard for a lot of parents, but they will see something that can be disheartening or concerning to them, and you need to talk about it.
Okay, I like that. That sounds good. Is there a prayer or a psalm that you found people respond well to when they feel overwhelmed, Eleni?
Sure. The one that often comes to mind is, I'd say, Psalm 120. It says, a prayer of the afflicted when he is overwhelmed poureth out his complaints before the Lord.
Well, that's the key. You have to go to the Lord with everything. And that's the beauty of the loving God that we all believe in, that we can go to him whenever we have difficult times. Eleni, thanks very much for being with us today. Folks, this is a really important topic, and I hope you'll interact with us by going to our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and all of them, and send us your thoughts and send us your concerns about this particular topic. Thanks, Eleni.
Thanks so much, Father.
It seems a bit incongruous to ask you to go to our social media pages after that conversation, but it is the best way for you to interact with us. And after all, we do want to have a follow-up conversation on all of this. If there's any way we can help, we want to provide that assistance. Our website is myocn.net. You can find our blog page there, The Sounding. And then, of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter. This is the Orthodox Christian Network and a broadcast entitled Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. We're here each week, and I hope you can join us. Tell your friends about us, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.